4/5/85, 8:30 a.m., hearing room A. Work session on HB 2169, HB 2170. Public hearing and work session on SB 181, SB 182, and SB 189. Tape 156, side A.
Hey, dear Tom, happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much. 21 today. Or is it 25?
Did City of Portland get to you on their amendment?
Let them present it.
Who needs help?
Boundary change bill. 2169, 2170, 181, 182, 189. That's it.
I saw it, did I?
We have a work session on 5.
And the bill goes down.
Let's see, the first two, they weren't from subcommittee, were they?
The first one is from subcommittee.
And what about 2170?
Yeah, but you were just bringing it back, but that wasn't, remember, it was informal, wasn't it formal?
Okay, so 2169 was?
That was the one.
A separate subcommittee, not the end.
Yeah, right, that was the one.
The five measures this morning, work sessions on all of them, 2169, 2170, 181, 182, and 189. We'll pick them in that order. The first measure is 2169. We had an informal subcommittee. That informal subcommittee was chaired by Representative McCracken.
Who's meeting with the speaker?
He's meeting with the speaker.
I have a hard time dealing with those kinds of things.
Let's go ahead and go to 2169 anyway. Is it pretty straightforward? Is it something you can explain, Terry?
If I could, just to take a minute, just to tell you what 2169, as it came to the committee, is a Department of Revenue bill, and basically makes some relatively small changes in the senior citizen deferral program. Recall in a discussion at the hearing that it requires that the county clerk lien fees paid by Department of Revenue be a lien against the tax deferred property, and also that those, the lien fees be billed to the department rather than the department making the payment. Recall a discussion that at times the county will change those lien fees after the first of the year, and there's been some problems with the department not being aware what the proper fees are when they send the payment in. There was a request of the counties, and if that was an acceptable procedure for them, and the response back from the counties was yes, that it was. Senator Riles then came before the committee requesting some changes in the deferral program, senior deferral program, dealing with the requirement that individuals be, that the property be their homestead, and raising an issue concerning individuals that for reasons of health were absent when they applied and hence weren't eligible for the program. An informal subcommittee was set up to look into that issue. That subcommittee came back to you with four alternatives, all quite similar. They are in your books behind the orange pink tab, exhibits, 2169, and you'll find -3, -4, -.
Some of us have a green tab.
I'm sorry. Behind the exhibit tab, whatever color it happens to be, that you'll find a -3, -4, -5, and -6 amendments. Those amendments offer you four different options on the wording that would allow individuals who are absent from the homestead for reasons of health to qualify for the program. They would also have a retroactive provision that allows qualification if the sole reason the disqualification took place was because they were absent from the homestead because of reasons of health back to 1984, you added 2 years, 84 and 85. The -3 amendments, and you can pick up the wording right off the front page in terms of the change. If I can refer you to the -3 amendments online.
Excuse me, I don't have a copy of the -3 amendment.
I
Everybody else have dash three in their notebooks?
The dash three amendment, just take a look at line 12 and 13, with the addition of the language was an exception to the requirement that it be a homestead, except for an individual required to be absent from the homestead by reason of health. Like, if you'll just flip to the dash four, notice the dash four says, adds the word temporary to the absent. It says temporarily absent from homestead by reason of health. Dash five puts a limitation on the absence to not more than 2 years. And dash six puts an income requirement on the exception that if the individual is absent by reason of health, they are precluded from earning any income from that property during that time period. Recall that we used to have an income requirement, income limitation on the deferral property. That was removed, I believe, in 1983. This reinstates an income requirement, a rather strict income requirement in terms of not allowing any, with respect to only those individuals that we're accepting because they're absent by reason of health.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burroughs?
This issue keeps coming back, and I can see that we ought to deal with this during the interim because I can see a couple of other issues. The reason we took that out was the income portion. We had examples, I know, in the Skinner's Butte area of Eugene where elderly people would rent the garage. They weren't driving anymore. It was income producing. It was just they were prohibited from renting the garage, and I wish in some way we could deal with that. They're not renting it out. I can see what you're trying to say. We don't want it to be a rental for them to be renting their homestead while they're gone. But on the other hand, I don't want to say they can't be renting their garage. I am making it more complicated, but I also realize there are other situations.
Very valid question. Terry, what's the answer?
Let me go back to the current law allows it to be income producing property. And so we remove that income requirement. What this dash six amendment would do, and realize this is one of the options. What this dash six amendment would do would be to reinstate the income limitation with respect to only those individuals that were temporarily absent. So I think the legislature spoke to your concerns in 83 and removing the income requirement. This does, and this is just one of the options, but this does reinstate it, but for only those people that are temporarily absent that are in this exception category where they're temporarily absent from the home. So
if they have an apartment over the garage and they're renting the apartment over the garage, even though that's not their domicile,
I'm looking at Bob Pipkin is here from Department of Revenue. Maybe he might want to respond.
Hey, Bob,
to that question.
If you our mic unfortunately won't pick up your nod, can you come up and give us a statement, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Pipkin from the Department of Revenue. To address Terry's question, in 1983, the legislature changed the law on the income requirement. And as long as the total household income is less than $17,500, you can rent your garage out. You can rent a small cabin on the property or whatever, as long as your total income is less than $17,500. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Chair.
Chief Trahan?
Given the situation that Representative Burroughs suggested, some individual has an apartment over their garage that they're renting out. Their gross income is under $17,500, but they are temporarily absent from their main residence. Under these amendments under the day six amendments that would not allow the property to be income producing as such, would that side rental that they might have put them out of the program?
Mr. Chairman, after 7300.
As long as this rental is not their actual homestead, I don't think we'd have to worry about that.
Amendment 6 would be addressing where someone actually moved into the house itself.
And I don't think that's quite strong enough. I don't think we have to worry about it. I'm not sure.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Same track here?
The amendment says the deferral shall not be allowed if the individual is earning the income from the property at the time the claim is filed. Now, I really think that that apartment over the garage is income from the property. And I know that's, you know, that's not what the department's intending, but I think that's what the words say.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scott.
I haven't really made up my mind on this yet, but it seems to me that there might be some reason to look at combining 5 and 6, so that if, and eliminating temporary too, because I can see that a person might be permanently removed from the homestead, not have time to get the affairs in order, be permanently confined to a nursing home or something like that, and there might be some period that is necessary to let them get out of this or sell the property or whatever they need to do. Now, I think if we had removed temporary and then include the two-year period and the income test, that would maybe give the people a chance to get their affairs in order. I realize there might be other circumstances too, but maybe that would help solve that problem. In other words, let them have income up to the two-year period.
Jim Treher?
Chairman?
Oh, is it Representative Hostica?
Yeah, I guess I don't understand the suggestion. I thought I understood it until the last point. I think that the dash 5 probably makes more sense. I would sort of be reluctant to preclude any income, however meager it may be, because of situations that have been talked about in others where a person might want to have somebody living in their house and rent out a room just for security's sake. And I think that would also be precluded by 6 the way it's written. I guess I'm not really interested in an income test, an additional income test. I think the 2 years would be the way to go.
So your preference is the dash 5, as written. Representative Burroughs?
That's my preference. That's my strong preference. I just think if you have a house that's empty for 2 years, you probably want somebody renting a room just to keep it safe. We do have an income income limit. During the interim, I wish we could talk about this whole issue of assessments. Either, obviously, we're thinking about senior citizens, but the idea that an elderly person had a $44,000 assessment just boggles my mind. And I think we ought to talk about that whole issue during the interim. I don't think we have time this session.
Probably not.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I could accept
that. Representative Scott?
Dash 5 amendments also. I think that would probably take care of the concern that with regard to
okay. Let me ask the committee, just to play the devil's advocate here, why is it that we need to go so far as to put a two-year limitation on? Why would it not be more appropriate just to say, except for an individual required to be absent from the homestead by reason of health, as in the dash 3?
I could accept that, Mr. Chairman.
Or dash 4, except for an individual required to be temporarily absent from the home.
I could accept that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
I guess on the number 1, we did hear speculation, if not testimony, about people who might be ordered to move to Arizona because of some health condition.
Or Hilo.
Wherever it may be. or Ben, I don't know.
So that would drive us to number 2, which would have the insertion of the word temporarily.
The dash 4
on
there.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Steve Scone.
Well, again, I think an individual in these circumstances, the legitimate cases, could be permanently removed from their home and permanently incarcerated, placed in a nursing home or a hospital or some other type of care facility, and it would take a little while to get their affairs in order, I think. So I would prefer some definite period of time, but I think even a year is probably too short. I think 2 years is probably pretty good.
Damn it, I wish you were so
okay. Might be helpful if very quickly we could see if there's anyone in the audience that would like to come forward and speak to their preference, and I would ask that you limit your comments to 2 sentences, and anyone who wants to speak come at the same time and sit in the chairs that are up here.
All at once.
Only 1 major clause per sentence.
Senator Ryle, representative, want to come up?
I
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Lawrence.
That's one sentence.
I'm Gregory Lane, southeast in Salem.
Thank you very much for your two sentences.
Yes or no?
What's your preference?
Well, I'm representing United Seniors, and our preference is number three.
Dash three?
Dash three. And the others are unnecessary, I think, because this is already being policed by Adult and Family Services, Senior Service Division. They monitor these people that go to nursing homes, which is the bulk of what we're talking about. And I think it would be not cost-effective to set up another office to monitor these programs when we already have it being done.
What's the problem with the word temporarily?
Well, I just see temporarily as something that would cause discussion and interpretation problems, because you do have something there that you don't know. Everybody's going to argue what is temporary, and I think it might just cause problems.
What's the problem with a two-year limitation?
Two-year limitation is far too brief, and I think I'm a very good example of that. I was laid up for 5 years with a stroke and a heart attack. Over 5 years, and I'm back again. And I think that you cannot predict with modern medicine how long a person is going to be there. And this thing is being monitored by our other agencies, because they take the people out of a nursing home when they feel they're able, mm-hmm. and they're watching them because they want to put them back in the mainstream and put them on Project Independence. So, as I say, I think this is already being monitored, and I just don't think it's cost effective to have to add more employees to the revenue department to monitor something like this when it's already being done. They'd just take a phone call to call Senior Service Division to find out about the patient, because they keep track of these patients.
Thank you very much. You want to introduce yourself?
Chairperson Troop, I'm Paul Wickman, Senator Riles, legislative aide. With respect to Representative Hostica's questions about the income, I guess I would just reiterate what Senator Riles said in her original testimony, and that was that the 17.5 is a household income limitation, and it's very unlikely that you're going to have anybody having get more income than that and flying off to Arizona, Sun City, Arizona, for 6 months or whatever.
Which preference would Senator Riles have?
Dash three.
Okay, what's wrong with the word temporarily?
Exactly what Ray Lawrence indicated, that it could be construed or could be interpreted to be much shorter than a situation like where Ray Lawrence, okay. for instance.
And what's the problem with the 2-year term? Is that the same?
Same situation.
Okay, questions for these two gentlemen? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I've got
Dave
one.
Trainer?
Ray, for you, please. Ray, you told us that Senior Services Division monitors these folks who are in the nursing home.
Yes.
Don't you think that with that monitoring, they could pretty well determine what's temporary and what's permanent? Because they're already doing
they're
it.
They're doing
it. They have a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Well, the problem is when you say temporary or 2 years, the person that's in a nursing home, you don't know until they've had some treatment and they've been taken care of how they're going to respond. And for instance, a stroke, it takes quite a while in rehabilitation before you recover. Okay. But you do recover a good percentage of the time today. And like I say, I'm a good example of that. So I feel that this is a problem. There's one other problem that concerns us deeply in United Seniors. As most of you well know, I've worked on this program for a long time. And one of our aims is to simplify the program and to not create confusion, because the frail elderly are the people we're worried about, mostly widows, and we're trying to get the ones that really should be on the program to get on. And if we create a lot of language that makes it confusing, then they're afraid that somehow or other they're going to get disqualified and be stuck or something, and they're afraid to get on the program. So we want to keep it as simple as possible, and I think we can do it with our existing agencies and these people much easier than putting it down in the law and telling these people, well, you have to have this and you have to have that. It's a 2-page article right now in brief deal explaining it, and you add more, it confuses them even more.
Any further questions? Thanks very much. Terry, could you talk to us a little bit about the administration? As I look at it, I think there might be some confusion that this might require a tremendous amount of administration. We're just talking about the time that one qualifies and what criteria one assesses when that qualification or lack of is determined. Could you talk a little bit about it?
It came to light in the some of the discussions in the informal subcommittee that the amount of staff that Department of Revenue has to carry out their administrative requirements and with respect to the whole senior deferral program is very small. And what we're talking about in these provisions is our criteria that are determined for the most part when the person comes into the program. They are continuing requirements, but the Department of Revenue is simply not catching, not administering this on individuals, not catching many people that are temporarily absent now. And I'm sure that Bob's here from the department to speak to that, but I just want the committee to be aware that you've got a relatively low level of administration with respect to this program, just from the constraints within the department. And Richard Mund, Director of Department of Revenue, for the first informal subcommittee meeting, and I think was quite upfront on their ability to even administer the law as it is now. And so what I'm saying is that you're making some changes here to allow more people to be initially qualified within the program. As it turns out, those people that are in the program now, for the most part, are not being disqualified because they don't meet the criteria that's in the law now. They may be catching the ones as they come in, when they first come into the program, but they're not even catching the people that are temporarily absent now from the homestead, simply because they don't have the staff to do that. So I guess what I'm saying is your practical impact of the policy here is probably only on those people that are initially coming into the program, because the ones that are in the program now are probably are staying in even if they're temporarily absent, that they're simply not catching them when they are absent.
Who would like to put forth a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendments to 2169, labeled House Bill 2169-3.
Representative Hugo moves the -3 amendments. Discussion?
Okay.
Jim Traeger?
I have a question, I guess, but before we get too far into this. Terry, a couple years ago, we had a lot of concern about the growth of this program and what it was doing to our cash flows. And of course, we set up a revolving account and some of those things that have occurred. Where are we at in round dollars on this whole thing?
Okay. What we did in 1983, the program was changed from funded out of the float to a revolving fund, beginning with a general fund appropriation, because it doesn't pay for itself at this stage in the game. That in the governor's estimate, there is a $20 million appropriation to the program for 30 million dollar appropriation to that revolving fund for the 1985-87 biennium. We haven't come up with a formal estimate yet, but that's probably more than is necessary. But it is a major general fund appropriation to continue that program, because into the paybacks, those people that are dying or that are transferring ownership of the home is nowhere near what the cost of the existing and new people coming in, even with the income limitation, which has slowed the growth, but it's still growing. So we're looking at somewhere in that range, and the final figure's not been determined in the sort of budget balance procedures, but it's somewhere in that $20 to $30 million range will be the requirement. The impact of this particular change that you're making is something on the order of $300,000, primarily because of the retroactive provisions. There are a number of people who have been who were not allowed into the program in 1984 and 1985, primarily property tax deferral, not the special assessment deferral, because you're affecting both here. But you're talking something on the order of $300,000 and about 150 people that you'll be letting into the program. You might, let's make one last comment on the whole system. We are seeing a shift, a significant growth in the special assessment deferral. We're seeing a shift in property taxation
onto special assessments. So the major growth in percentage terms, not in terms of total, but in percentage terms, is in the deferral of special assessments. Special assessments are growing much faster. We're seeing that in the deferral program and in general.
Mr. Chairman.
Jim Trager.
One more quick one. I think maybe you touched it with the last two words, but what is the special assessments in general growing more rapidly?
That's what I was trying to say in the relative growth. The special assessments are the ones that are showing much higher percentage growth. They're a very small special assessment deferral is a very small percentage of the total deferral program. What I'm saying is that percentage is growing.
Further discussion? Tilda, please call the roll on the motion to amend insertion of dash three amendments.
Representatives Calori? Hanlon?
Aye.
Hostiga?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken Schoon?
Aye.
Trahern?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
And Troop?
Aye. Motion is adopted unanimously. The issue is now before us. Representative Burroughs.
I would move House Bill 2169 as amended to the floor with a few pass recommendations.
Discussion. Clerk, please call the roll on the motion.
Representatives Hanlon.
Aye.
Hostiga.
Aye.
Hugo.
Aye.
McCracken. Schoon.
Aye.
Trahern.
Aye.
Calori. Burroughs.
Aye.
And True.
Aye. Motion's adopted. The next item on our agenda this morning is House Bill 2170. And I believe we have two sets of amendments or a letter and one set of amendments. We have a letter and one set of amendments. Let's see, are the materials following 2169?
Okay, they haven't been formally presented to the committee, so I don't think that they're in the book.
Nope.
2170 amendments. Let me just review what's in the amendments.
First of all, I'd like to have you review the bill for us again, okay. Gary, and then review what's in the amendments.
The bill is another Department of Revenue bill at the pre-session files. One could argue it's a form of a housekeeping bill. There's a number of provisions in 2170 that the major intent of legislation is to try to bring in line eligibility requirements between the property tax deferral, senior property tax deferral, and the special assessment deferral. And basically that's what it does. It simply makes equivalent the requirements with respect to eligibility between property tax deferral and special assessment deferral. In that process, one of the things it eliminates, there's currently an annual filing requirement with respect to the special assessment deferral. There's not with respect to the property tax deferral. We remove that annual filing requirement so that they're the same. Some other specific provisions not related to requiring identical eligibility criteria is to make deferred taxes payable when a mobile or floating home is moved out of state. It's a concern over collection when you've got a piece of property with a lien on it that's kind of mobile. Fourth, I'm just going over the outline that's in your revenue analysis in your books. It voids any prohibition against deferral in any mortgage or land sale contract. And it specifically authorizes a lien foreclosure on delinquent special assessment deferrals. Currently you have, again, it's another one that's not eligibility requirement, but to treat the lien provisions the same in the special assessment deferral as in the property tax deferral system. So it's in form of a housekeeping bill. When the bill was heard, I think most of the questions or discussions were with respect to the making the deferred taxes payable on the mobile or floating home. Or maybe that's the most significant policy question in the underlying bill. the amendments before you are a, it's a major policy change in how special assessment deferrals are handled. What the amendments before you presented by the City of Portland require that the state pick up the entire deferral amount rather than the Red Bancroft amount. And they give you, currently, special assessment comes in and it's bancrofted. It's over many cases a 15 or 20 year period. And so the deferral system is coming in and picking up that Bancroft payment, which is make a semi-annual or annual payments. And it would come in with a special assessment of $10,000. That annual payment may be $700. And so the deferral system is picking up that $700 payment, and then there's a 6% interest that accrues to that payment each time. What this provision is to do is basically for the state to pick up front the entire deferral and then turn around and charge the Bancroft interest rate. And so rather than the property tax owner, in effect, borrowing the money